This is the MLW Radio Network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network, actually the new MLW Radio Network. I'm, of course, your host Striga, as always joined by Dylan.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Striga. It's good to be here.
But this time, it's not only Dylan on this show, because this now is not only the Eastern Lariat, no. It is the Lariat in the Rough, because we are joined by our good pal from Australia, Isaac.
How are we, gentlemen? That's a hell of an intro. Dylan gave me a really good intro the first time I was on here, but I think he just outdid him. That was a hell of an intro. Thank you very much. Yes, the intra-promotional crossover of Puro Podcast is long-awaited after 4 years. I'm very glad to be doing a podcast. I've done a podcast with Dylan, but Striga. So, yes, gentlemen, let's talk about some good old Puro Wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. The first time you were on was during the March Madness that Dylan put up so greatly. So that was some great fun to have.
Everyone took part in that. That was great fun. It was good.
Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff there.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, Isaac. I loved having you on, and you did a great job. I know a lot of people really loved our episode. We got to talk about all sorts of people, and we'll talk about some of those same people we talked about last time on this show, too. So I can't wait to have you on, and I'm so excited that both you and Striga and me, we're all here. The worlds are colliding. The podcast universe is coming down with something real special right now, so I'm super excited to do it.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, to be quite honest, these are some special times right now for actually most people worldwide because of all the corona-related issues we are having. And actually, these issues led to us three doing the show together because in these times there is not a lot that you can do on the weekends. So we got together to talk about some Japanese wrestling that is still, not still going on, but maybe you can say going on again. Because we are right on the beginning of Golden Week in Japan, and usually that would be the time of the year where a lot of companies would run their big shows. For example, Dragon Gate and Big Japan Pro Wrestling always run on May 5. They would run in Big Japan would run in Yokohama, of course, and we're talking about Big Japan a little bit later. In a lot of companies would run. For example, in Yokohama, there is this huge festival that always goes down on May 4, I believe, where 5, 6, 7 companies share the Radiant Hall and do some events there. But of course, New Japan, All Japan, they would run as well. And it looked pretty dire for Golden Week, to be honest. But now, there is not like wrestling in front of an audience in Japan, but there is a lot of wrestling on TV in Golden Week, actually, now. And we already had some shows last week. And at the beginning of April, that aired on TV that didn't have an audience, that we're going to talk about. So for the live audience, this is really a bad situation, but for us on TV, we got some new content at least.
Something's better than nothing in a time like this. I'm enjoying, there's some matches that we're talking about that I really enjoyed, but I don't know if you guys are starting to feel the same way, but these no crowd shows, yeah. I can't get through them like I was. Where I was 6 weeks ago, where I was like, all right, yes, we'll watch this. The Noah Tag League was going on. It was like a new show every 3 days. I was like, yeah, this is doable. Mm-hmm. But the atmosphere, I just can't do it.
You know, I think it depends on what the company does. When I was talking with Dylan about the All Japan show on April 6th, I said that usually for everything that I watch from an empty arena, I gotta watch something in front of fans. I kind of got more used to the empty arena shows, but there is a way of doing that. You talked about Noah, and I just saw today that Dylan put up his match of the year, match of the month list on our Patreon for April, and he also noted the worst match of the month, which was the six-man tag from the Global Tag League finals, which went on for
12-man tag. So he was even 12, longer.
Yeah, 12-man yeah. tag, which went like 26 minutes in an empty arena. It felt like it never ended. So doing it like All Japan did it on their April 6th show is the way to go. Quick, intense matches, but not a 26 fucking minute match.
Even then, the time, it can be used in the right way, you know, if you do it right. But that way was not the right way at all. With so many people, like, it didn't even accomplish what it was setting out to do with Soya making his debut. That match sucked, I thought. You know, and I know a lot of people, you know, a lot of people like that show, but to me that match, and I like the show too overall, it was a good show up and down, but something like that was the wrong way to do it. And I think that's the matches that are really going to be hurt the most. And if you do sign up to Patreon, you'll notice my show of the month was the All Japan show that you just mentioned earlier. And a big part of that is a lot of the meaningless matches were 3 minutes, mm-hmm. pretty much. And we blew through all of those without wasting time doing boring stuff.
I mean, Jiro versus Jenny Valletta didn't even go 1 minute.
Well, that set up another match afterwards,
that's
at
true.
Least.
But imagine but, imagine that going 20.
Ooh, that would be tough. I don't know if I would like that match at all. But, you know, the point is, a lot of those meaningless matches, if it had gone 1 minute, if it had gone 20 minutes, if it had gone 5 hours, it still meant the same, which was nothing, ultimately. So there was no reason for it to drag on, and just, like I said, stuff that nobody cares about should be relegated to much shorter times yeah. in this era. I'm not necessarily burned out on wrestling itself, even in the empty arena setting. But I think that you can't wrestle it like there are people in the crowd. There, you know, you have to be smarter about how you lay these things out. And if you don't do it, sometimes especially like the important matches, I'm still down for the most part. But the meaningless, boring matches, that I have much lower tolerance for those than in a regular show, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I can agree with that. We want to talk about some of these shows that we saw in the past couple of weeks, and I want to actually start with WrestleOne, because the company, even though they still use the phrase that they closed down for now, a lot of people are looking for new places to wrestle, and we saw some of those. But I want to go back to their final show, and this April 1st show from Curricon Hall was in so many ways very depressing, as it was the final show of the company without an audience. And, well, for the company, it was probably good to present themselves once more, and for the guys, it was good to get in the ring once more. And you could especially see that in that 8-man tag in the main event that had Kuma Arashi and Shotaro Ashino, Daiki Inaba and Koji Doi team, where everybody shook hands and Doi and Arashi wouldn't shake hands, and Arashi would smile at Doi because, of course, he turned against him back in the day, so they played that up. But overall, in my opinion, this show was basically just there to have Muto on the show once again. What's your opinion on that?
With this show, they packed out Kurikan as big as they packed out Kurikan for Kai's 2016 title run. about the same amount of folks in attendance. But no, for this show, honestly, I like a lot of these guys in WrestleOne, but it's about time this promotion went down and these guys got out and flourished, because in a scene like this, like, WrestleOne has been pretty depressing, you can say, for however long. There's been lots of bright spots, but, I mean, their last show in front of no people, the big thing of the show is Keiji Muto, just like it was in 2013.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely.
The highlight of the show for me was the Cheer One performance that started the show with Reika Saiki.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about that, Dylan. What do you think where she goes now? Because after Hana Kimura left Wrestle One, she was supposed to be the one woman on their roster that would be in the one women's match on the roster on all shows.
We kind of already talked about this when we talked about it, but basically it felt like they didn't have... There were so many different conflicting ideologies in this promotion's history, so, like, jumbled up and crazy, and that was definitely near the top of the list of, you know, stupidity, I would say, to have a one-person division. And she's very talented. She could go anywhere in the Joshi world, but she's faced with some injuries and stuff like that before, but super charismatic, great worker. They usually don't even show those things, but she obviously led that. I thought it was kind of cool that they did that on that end, but the show itself, as you mentioned, it was kind of depressing, and I tend to agree with you, Isaac. Even when you look at this promotion, even how you said the main point is for Muto to get on the show, but really, even then, Muto treats this company like his own personal, like, bastard child, kind of. You know, he doesn't even show any care to it at all, or anything like that, and that's kind of a shame, because a lot of people did work hard for it, and they did their best with it. But we're already seeing people, like you said, Isaac, you were totally right about people flourishing away from it. We're seeing people get much more of, you know, publicity and good things coming out of it.
And also, just quick last thing on Muto. Like, mostly everyone thought he was, like, still an integral part of the company. But it only came this year or so that, like, he hasn't been doing jack. Like, his hand's more in Noah or working with Nasawa than he has his own promotion.
I mean,
it's not even
he gave Kasayashi the promotion and said, here, it's yours now.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kasayashi apparently couldn't come up with anything to save the company. And he is the guy that I really feel bad for, because he had to go out there on this press conference with Muto even and say, look, guys, we can't do this anymore. And I'm really awfully sorry, but I just can't keep this up. And Muto was sitting there. Yeah, yeah, there was money. We brought in money. But overall, yeah, it's gone. That was bad stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, like, where does it leave? I didn't know what Hayashi was, where he was going to go. Like, a lot of the younger guys, I feel, are going to be okay. But I thought Hayashi might get a few small sponsors, maybe run a Shinkiba every month or two.
Like, an
Asuka
Pro.
But no, he's with Ledette.
Yeah.
They hired him. Yesterday, I saw.
Yes, and that's true. They hired him. I'm curious to see what he does. If he's going to be a wrestler, or if he's going to be in a similar position that Choshu has with Lidet, as he's an ambassador to their brand. We'll see that. And going back to Muto for one more thing here is that I think that Abema is really high on him, because now they are producing the second show with Muto on him after they did one on April 19, where he was in the six-man tag. And now they are doing this Muta festival also on Abema TV. So he seems to have some worth for them.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that is, I guess, where he's going. And on this show, there were some tag matches, some multi-man matches. Jun Toncho got a win over the Strong Hearts, finally, in the end here. I thought Takanori Ito and Pegaso Illuminar had a pretty nice match. But the best match on the show, in my opinion, was the third match, Alejandro against Kai Fujimura. Two guys I would really like to see pop up somewhere else. Along with, of course, Andy Wu. He's great, too.
Andy Wu, he's coming up on the All Japan show, isn't he? Well, was meant to.
He is going to be there. And he originally was from All Japan, too. He made the jump to
Wrestle I don't know. I hope I'm a fan of his, but he's never gone to that next gear for me. Andy Wu, I'm talking about.
Right.
You're
I'm here.
Andy Wu?
Wu, he's good. Like I liked him in Wrestle 1. It's hard for what you said, Isaac, I think is correct about a lot of people in Wrestle 1, never getting into the next level, and I think he definitely counts for that. But I think he's going to be in All Japan, like going forward. You know, like he started there, like you said, Striga, like, and he'll be back. And they need more juniors, so it really makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It really seems like that All Japan is taking in a lot of people from Wrestle 1. Same goes for Noah. It almost seems like this was one company too many in Japan, and now some things get back into order, as you could call it. But yeah, look, we had some guys coming back on this show too, with Akira, Ryota Hama, Yasufumi Nakanoe. They all left the company, and they all had their good reasons to leave the company back in the day. And they are now with other groups too. But of course, the main guys that left and that now popped up in All Japan Pro Wrestling are Shotaro Ashino and Yusuke Kodama. So what do you think about these two popping up in All Japan, Isaac?
Big fan. That's where we all wanted Shotaro to end up, I feel. I feel like 80% was All Japan, 20% was Noah. I feel like he made the right decision. It's good to see Kodama. He was obviously ex on the 30th of April show. He links back up with... I think we're seeing how much pull Tajiri has at the moment. Tajiri's involved in the office, doing something in All Japan because he has a heavy influence with who comes in. And, well, he trained Kodama originally in 2010 for Smack.
Exactly.
And then he started, well, Tajiri was with Wrestle 1. He had a hand in training everyone.
Yeah, Kodama came to Wrestle 1 with all the guys that came over from Wrestling New Classic.
Correct. Yeah, there was Smash, then Wrestling New Classic, then it sort of all, yeah. It was at 2010 to 2013 period, everyone from place to place, and then everyone sort of just found their home come 2014.
Yeah.
When you look at these guys, like Ashino and Kodama, I think they're very well received, and I think, you know, Kuma's coming in, well, but for all intents and purposes.
You don't know that yet. It's only May 2nd that we're taping this, Dylan. Come on.
Some people say that it's Buff Bagwell. But my sources are telling me that it's Kuma Arashi. it's kind of obvious, like all of the infants in Wrestle 1 that kind of have a place in the main guys. You saw Ashino and Kodama already. And then Tachibana got mentioned in DDT, you know, recently. It looks like he might have a spot there. So that's something interesting. We saw Soya in Noah, Yoshioka as well in Noah.
Yep.
So things are breaking off pretty decently. Wu will be coming into All Japan as well. Hayashi, I don't know what Ledet's doing, like I said, to be honest with you. So it's kind of crazy on that end. But somebody like...
Is Masayuki Kono going to retire? Like, who is going to sign 42-year-old Masayuki Kono?
Pro Wrestling A-Team.
Hey, don't you disrespect A-Team. A-Team is
there was no disrespect at all. I really guess that this is the place for guys like this to go.
Yeah, literally. Tomohiro Hashimoto and Hasegawa, you know, facing off in a death match.
Absolutely.
I don't know what like guys like Kono are going to do. Some of the rookies, I feel, as they're just going to
fly off into the sunset. It depends who they know and who they trained under. Like, for example... When you go to Seki Yoshioka, as you said, he went to Noah, because obviously he came into the business with Hayata in WrestleGate at that point, and obviously Hayata remembered him, and maybe they talked, and they got into business with one another, so that worked out for him. I don't know if like the guys like Hajime, Kai Fujimura, or Takumi Baba have anyone in the business that they can go back to get some bookings, but it really depends on this.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was. Yeah, I was about to make a similar point because Isaac, you said earlier the young guys would be fine. where they're, for me, they're the ones I worry about most because of what me and you are. Again, me and you have talked about this kind of on other shows, Strick, but these guys don't really have that foothold in the business to where they even know where to go or what to do or have anyone to go to bat for them. If they have that, that could be good. Someone like Fujimura, too, he's very small, so he's going to have a very hard time getting in somewhere. Like, whenever I see him, you think of something like DDT, Dragon Gate, that kind of thing you would hope for him. And he's a talented guy. I'd love to see him catch on somewhere. But he's just going to need to have someone to go to bat for him, either that they know him or that they saw enough Wrestle 1 to recognize the talent of some of these guys. Even someone like Ito, who I think is a really good talent on his own. He's not a rookie anymore. He's been around for a few years now, but he doesn't really have any connections to get in these places or a name. Like, most importantly, like, no real name value in Wrestle 1.
That's and the crucial issue that Wrestle 1 never really got going, that they created name value for any of their talent, or for most of their talent, to be more precise. But yeah, as you said, Isaac, All Japan was the landing place that most people wanted to see Shotaro Ashino in, and that is why he was the number one pick that I made on the Wrestle 1 draft that Dylan and I did, and my number two pick actually was Yusuke Kodama, for that matter. I gotta say, for those two, it's perfect that they wound up there. All Japan needs juniors, as Dylan said, and All Japan also could use some fresh blood in their heavyweight ranks with Ashino. And what did you think about their debut, Isaac?
I thought it was a good... we're talking about from the 30th of
April.
30. It was fine. It showed off what Ashino and Kodama can do. I really like their German suplex at the end. They're double team German. Mm-hmm. I think that looks really good. It was just an extended. Kodama sold a bit, but it was 75% just showing off what Ashino and Kodama can do.
Yeah,
it's hard. I feel sorry for these guys. It's just like the guys that are meant to have these big matches, but it's in front of no one. They probably, like, imagine the pop of Ashino coming out in front of Kurikan Hall and dropping.
I'm pretty sure that he would have been in the Champion Carnival as a replacement.
Oh, surely.
So, yeah. That would have been great. Dylan, the debut of these two former Wrestle 1 guys.
I thought it was planned out well. It accomplished what it needed to in getting, like Isaac said, really a spotlight on Ashino more than anything. Kodama, he did some good things. I liked him. I thought Hokuto Omori actually looked really good in his own right, working from under these guys. And I think he did a great job of making them look good. But overall, it was a solid match, I would say, and a good debut.
I was going to make that exact point about Hokuto Omori. After he got this new gear now, that he's the North Wolf. Of course, he's from...
I noticed that, the North Wolf.
Yeah, he's from Hokkaido, so he's the North Wolf. And he...
Is Hokkaido the ghost town?
Hokkaido the ghost town? No, it's the northern prefecture. Hokuto Omori, not only he got some new gear, but he also is like... Is he growing a mullet, I was wondering?
Yes, he is. He's like Sekimoto 2013 deflated.
Yeah, he got a lot bigger than compared to last year, but I agree with Dylan, he looked good here. He did some good work with Kodama and with Ashino, but mostly this was about Ashino making his debut. Kodama will get his moment when he faces Yusuke Kodama on the May 5 show. We're not going too deep into that show because it's already in a couple of days. But yeah. Dylan, on your match of the month list, there was one more from this All Japan show. It's place 7 on your match of the month list. It's Akira Francesco and Kento Miyahara versus Yenki Nicho Kenjo for the All Asia Tag Team title.
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was a good end to the show. And you already had the hook of the... the debut of X, which obviously turned out to be Kodama, and Ashino having his big match there. You had the big hook of Suwama and Yoshitatsu as well on the show, which I'm sure many people were very, very excited about. Big win for Yoshitatsu on the show. But then you had the main event, And I thought this was such a, again, I love that All Japan is going back to, like, classic tropes that they've had in the Baba era. I mentioned it in the six-man tag we talked about that went the full hour, which I thought was a fantastic match. Mm-hmm. And then you had this, which was another classic trope, where you had the tag team champions facing a main eventer and then a lower guy as the team, which is something very often done in All Japan. Like, it gives a good win for the champions, and also you get a unique match, and it doesn't hurt the big guy on the opposing team, this time obviously Kento. And I really liked Akira here in this match. I thought he did some good work. Isami, I thought, has had a great month. If you do...
All of this stuff this year, all the six-man's ambassador, and he's having a really good year.
We're going to talk about him some more when we go to Big Japan.
Yeah, exactly. Wherever he goes, he's had a really strong run, really all year, really all life, I feel like. His entire he's had a good run, pretty much. But especially, I think, this last month, he was a standout type of guy at this moment. I really appreciated some of his work wherever he went. And here, again, I thought he had some really great interactions with people. I'd love to see Isami and Kento have some kind of singles match
at
some point.
That was my exact point on Twitter yesterday. I want to see that. Champion Kano, do it.
Isami and Nico in the Champions Carnival. That, honestly, like, I forget, someone made a point on Twitter. Like, if All Japan is the home for Yuko and Isami doing non-death matches, I'm all about that. Because they've done a lot with everyone else, but, like, we haven't heard of them mixing it up with a Kento or a Zeus or... Yeah. Imagine Yankees versus Suwama and Shuji. Well, it has happened, but it didn't make tape.
I mean, 0-1 really was the first place to do that when they brought in Yankee Nicho Kenjo for the Dangan Yankees back in the day.
Yes. They're just one of those tag teams, like they're the premier indie tag team. Like.
Yes.
They just go everywhere.
Exactly. And about the point that Dylan made about the All Asia Tag title, I really think it is the perfect way to use this title. I was a big fan when they basically had this title as the junior tag title for All Japan. But doing this in the way they did it here with Kento as the main guy and Akira Francesco as the up-and-coming guy, this was great too. You could also maybe make the point that this is kind of an open-weight tag title now, with a heavyweight and a junior heavyweight going in there, with Isami and Miyamoto obviously being on the verge of being heavyweight, a little under maybe. So you have to use this tag title in a different way than you use your main tag title, because this is the All Japan World title. Well, tag team title is always the main event tag title, and the All Asia tag title is a useful tool to get new guys over. So I like that.
I agree. Everyone's held those titles, those All Asia titles. If you go back on Wiki or Cage Match, Cage Match, of course. go on Cage Match and look back the history of the All Asia. Everybody has held that. It's a very one of those titles that are cool to go look back at who's held it.
Absolutely. I don't know. Is there anything on this show, on the undercard, that we need to go over? I think Dylan already touched on the Suwama and Yoshitatsu thing.
Shuji and Jun Akiyama walked through their most basic match. they were teaming up. Shuji was teaming up with Yusuke.
Yep.
Yusuke Okada, and Jun was teaming up with
Tajiri.
Tajiri, yes. Not a very good match. No.
not surprised.
Very
actually.
Plodding, very slow. I mean, it's what you're gonna get for an MD Arena house show. That was the only other match I watched. I got halfway through the Zeus and a Zungi.
Izanagi, actually, yeah.
Izanagi.
Former Maruyama guy.
Yes. I'm Maruyama in BJW. Just wanted to throw that out there. He was really good in, like, 2016. Yeah. And then when I came back to Puro last year, I was like, where's he gone? I thought he went back to Osaka or something. Then I saw he's reinvented himself. But no, he's enjoyable.
Many people were wondering where he went all those times. We were really worried about him, but it turns out he came back as Izanagi. But
yes.
String, what did you think about the Suwama thing? Do you think they're setting up a title match for Yoshitatsu?
I think they are. And to be quite honest, I mean, I've made the same point with Pro Wrestling Noah and them having René Dupree and El Hijo de Dr. Wagner Jr. winning the tag league and the tag title. I mean, why not? There is really nothing going on right now, and why not have Yoshitatsu as the first defense for Suwama in an empty arena? I mean, what can go wrong there?
I think what could go wrong is Yoshitatsu winning and forming World Wrestling Entertainment Gun and like starting a stable with Tajiri and Jinsei Shinzaki
and Jiro.
Yeah, Kazuma.
Yes. that won't happen.
What are the chances that Yoshitatsu shoots on Suwama to win the Triple Crown?
I would love that. That would be a big story if something like that happened. You know, we'd be like, we can't believe in the world. Yes, it shocked the whole wrestling world for sure. But there is one major difference between this and the Noah thing, because when I first saw that, like René Dupree, I was like, what in the world? Like, I couldn't even believe my eyes at this tag team. And, you know, it wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't. Absolutely decent.
Oh, yeah.
Dupree's very good.
Yep.
I have to say, I remember him. He was pretty bad in, like, 2010, 2011 when he was out of WWE and he'd work. I think he started off with Hustle and then he just bounced around all Japan. He worked everything. He worked Tokyo Championship Wrestling. He's worked indies. But I thought the tag team with Wagner worked pretty well. I feel like it's more of a money tag team in Mexico. But, I mean, for an empty arena, why not?
Yeah. The main difference is, though, with that, is like when I saw that, I was like, my expectations were dirt poor for at this. And they actually exceeded them, ultimately. But, and I think I made the same point you did on that. I was like, well, now's probably the time, if you're going to do something way different, now's a pretty good time for with no fans or anything in attendance. What can it hurt, really? The main difference between that and Yoshitatsu is that this really isn't anything different. Like, this is a normal main eventer for All Japan. Like, he's been in title shots every year for pretty much, you know. And actually, he's done pretty solid in them. You know, I won't, you know, take too much of a dump on him. But to me, that's not really something I would have in mind as something different. If I were doing something like that, Suwama and Yoshitatsu is just not lighting it up for me. Again, we have the same issue that I spoke of when Suwama won the title. Mm. To me, now is the time to go something way off the wall. Someone like, you can't really do it with Ashino, you want to build up to that. But somebody different, like somebody that we haven't seen.
Lay out the scenario that would be way different that All Japan could realistically do.
Well, see, what they would do is not going to happen, you know. But, like, to me, someone like, you look at this roster, and there's just not a lot of depth on there to even do something
that's
like that.
That's the issue there.
So, someone like Isami versus Suwama. I think that would work. Like, what difference does it make? It could be anybody. Like, to be honest with you, like, ultimately, it could be anybody. I'm not a big fan of this matchup. And it's not even the match quality itself, because Yoshitatsu has delivered in the past, and Suwama has delivered in the past. I just think that they're making positive steps with guys like, you know, Yankee Nichu Kenju, guys like Ashino, Kodama, Kuma, like all these Wrestle 1 guys coming in. I hope that they can move forward with something, because this match is totally justifying all the stuff I said when Suwama won the title, in my opinion. Like, my fears that this would just be what it is. So I'm hopeful they can move on from this. I don't have a big problem with it on a match quality scale, just the perception of it, like the principle of it, is what's rocking me a little bit. But who knows? I think it could still be a good match, though, at least.
You know, with them and all these guys now coming in, they will have at least three new guys. There is going to be some more stuff on the undercards that you can look forward to in comparison to last year's All Japan. And I gotta say, as you said, I think they took a huge step forward in booking their shows and laying out actual storylines, and not just having Jun Akiyama beat up Masanobu Fuji on every undercard they have. That's actually one positive, that Fuji isn't on these shows as one of the elder people on the All Japan roster, but I still don't know why Kyo Iwata had to be on the show. That doesn't make any sense right now in this situation. But the point I was going to make, they are setting up different stables, they are setting up different storylines, they are setting up different programs with guys. So I'm really looking forward to what All Japan has to offer in the next coming weeks.
Yeah, you might be right. This may just be a phase one type of thing. It's setting up, and we may see the fruits of it down the line. Let me ask you this question, and I'll throw it to both of you fine gentlemen. Where do you see Kento going for here? He was in the main event of the show in this kind of, like, I don't want to say throwaway match, but it was kind of a throwaway match. It was a good match, but not overly important with Akira. Where do you see Kento going from here without the title and no Champion Carnival in sight?
Isaac, you go first.
Kento, like, you can't put in, honestly, what I'd like, they don't need to worry about drawing fans. Just put him in these undercard matches and singles matches against these guys who he doesn't get to wrestle against. Put him against Dan Tamora. If you're going to have, say, three shows a month, put him against Dan Tamora. Put him against Black Mensa Ray. Give me a Konnaka equals one rematch.
Yes!
But, you know, like, don't just put him in these random tags where he's going to come in and do his three knees and then pin him. Like, we don't need another six-man Kento where he does his two spots in a lazy tag on an empty arena show. Like, I'd love to see him have a little, like, just beat up a rookie for 70-80% of the match, take a few moves, you know, they learn a bit. I feel like that's a better use of Kento than just lounging around.
Yeah, you know, I would really keep him away from the Triple Crown for now. Because
we've
seen this long reign now, and actually him being in the All Asia Tag Team title picture would be something different for that title too. And maybe him and Francesco can get a rematch, or he can get another partner to go for the titles once again and win that in the end. That I would actually love to see. Him bouncing around in the mid-card with the All-Asia Tag title would be something that I do now.
That could be pretty good. I kind of get the feeling they're just going to keep on with him and Jake and Yuma pretty much in some on the undercard, which, you know, it's okay. It would be better if they had the carnival, like, to really advance that whole storyline. But I like Isaac's idea of wrestling these young guys or undercards or things like that. I think that would be really cool, actually, if they did that. I think they'll do what I said, but I think your idea is better, actually.
I was actually going to make the point, too, with Dan Tamura, as you brought him up, Isaac. I noticed that on this show, he had this tag match, Duwama and Hikaru Sato beat Yoshitatsu and Dan Tamura. I noticed that he had gotten significantly better. And when he first started out, he was not very good. And the issue was that he only worked with the other new guys, with Hokuto Omori and with Atsuki Aoyagi, Yuma's brother. And he really didn't have anyone to guide him in the ring. But as soon as they put him into the ring with some of the older guys on the roster, he quickly got better. So that is something that they need to do with him more often.
It's the only way you learn. Like, they're essentially being backyarders if they're just wrestling themselves. Yeah. Like, anybody can do that. Like, you only get better by wrestling people with better experience that you learn from, yada yada yada. You've heard it all before, but sure. Dan, he wasn't built for wrestling when I first saw him. I was like, he's got two left feet. he doesn't look like he should be wrestling, but no, he's gotten significantly better.
Yeah, I don't know. Is there anything else we need to bring up in regards of All Japan Pro Wrestling?
No, I don't think so.
Harping on Jun Akiyama being a WWE guest coach on commentary, so I don't know what that says about the status, if he still wants to fly over in 2 months or whatever. But they're staying W, like they're showing off that Akiyama has some ties to WWE.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna bring up Jiro as well earlier on. I forgot that. I don't think that WWE is bringing in anyone in the foreseeable future, to be quite honest.
Oh, God, no.
And that goes for Jiro as well, because Jiro, on Tokyo Sports, he said that he was scheduled to go to the US with a visa during April. So that was the plan for him. At least that's what he said there. And it actually, on the picture in Tokyo Sports, it looks like he's wearing his trunks as a face mask. So I'm not sure about that. For Akiyama, that's unfortunate for him personally. I'm not really not sure what is going on with All Japan and WWE now, but at least
I think it's all frozen.
Yeah, it's all frozen for now. There was something going on, but for now there is nothing going to happen. We talked about NXT Japan on one of our last shows. We did that. They are basically out of the picture now, so I don't think we gotta talk about that in the foreseeable future.
If ever.
If ever, yeah.
It might be one of those folklore things that we can look back on in 30 years and so. Remember when they had, like, Sekimoto signed and they're about to do this big thing and then the world collapsed and never caught? Like, I'm sure it's going to have one of those stories like that where we look back on and be like, really? That almost happened? Interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. And,
you know, just one more thing on this, because I think that's a good kind of... you know, considering everything going on right now, especially in the world of Japanese pro wrestling, when it comes to All Japan or NOAH, well, you know, I feel like it's really hard to make accurate predictions or really have a good foresight into what's going to happen, because everything could be flipped on its head, you know, in another month or two. Like, you know, all kinds of people could be available, and who knows what the rosters are going to end up looking like in 3 months, basically.
Yeah, that's true, and... one company for that this especially goes is, of course, Big Japan Pro Wrestling. We're going to talk about some of their business at the end of the show. But for now, I want to go back to their double shot on April 25 and April 26, when they also ran their show in 2AW Square. And 2AW Square is going to be another talking point on this show later on, too. Dylan, I want to get your take on this first. They gave the Ikitosen victory to their strong heavyweight champion Daichi Hashimoto. We know that Daichi isn't exactly your favorite wrestler. So now what did you think about this way to go with?
Well, you're right. It's no secret that I'm not exactly the Hashimoto family's favorite son when it comes to this. But for Big Japan, considering what's come out... I really, really question all of this, to be honest with you. Like, a lot of their booking decisions, I don't understand with Daichi. But at the end of the day, they were... It was kind of... You know, a lot of people are going to say, oh, well, it's their fault. But also, they were put in a tough position with the way things turned out, to where they had these four men in the semifinals. They basically had to skip a bunch of the tournament, so a lot of their plans got messed up, and we wound up with this crazy final four of Jake Lee, Quiet Storm, Sekimoto, and Hashimoto. Sekimoto, Hashimoto, they're two veterans of Big Japan. Hashimoto, obviously the champion. Jake wasn't going to be able to win because he was in All Japan, obviously, which is why we saw what we saw with Quiet Storm making the finals.
I love I don't that finish actually. I thought it was very funny.
well, yeah, the finish, the execution-wise was what it was, but more so just the idea of Jake making it wasn't going to happen because they wouldn't want him to lose a big match like that. So that's why we got this kind of, like, screwy finish here.
Why I was thinking before everything got so out of hand with the coronavirus, and I figured they could still run the Yokohama show on May 5, I was thinking that Jake Lee may be winning the thing in the end.
Yeah, see, that was a legitimate possibility, especially when you look at the other three names. You know, it's like, usually you don't, the champion doesn't really win these tournaments all that often. It's pretty rare, actually. So a lot of people probably X'd him out right away. Quiet Storm, nobody thought would be in this position, and that's kind of what I'm saying.
Except for Isaac.
And me. Like I said, I predicted this as well. Me and Isaac were on the Quiet Storm train.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Don't get started on the Quiet Storm.
The Quiet Storm was a storm in this tournament, but I just don't think that...
Jesus.
I don't know if you'd call it that, but anyway.
Well, I just don't think that was Big Japan's original plan. Was for
of course not. They do have plans for Storm, because they did, at least before this happened, because he beat Yuji Hino clean. And then they were going to form their old K-Dojo team and take on the Sekimoto and Sato, but obviously that won't ever happen.
No.
But he was in their plans, but, I mean, after this tournament, I don't know. Who even knows? We can't fantasy book anything, really.
No.
Especially what we're going to talk about later in the show.
At the end of the day, I don't think it really matters that much, but I also will, if I go to my grave, which sometimes I feel like I am about to with all of the pain I feel in my mouth right now about what's going on there, but if I do, I will go to my grave thinking Daichi is not the man to lead any professional wrestling company in 2020. some people may like his screaming in the empty arena settings. And that's great. I'm glad many people have come around. Maybe the lockdown and the empty arenas has driven people off the wall or changed their minds, or maybe he's gotten better. And who knows?
That is one of the points that I always make about Daichi. I just think he puts effort in. I think all year now he has put more effort into his matches than in the past. So, I don't know. It's a weird thing to talk about with him all the time. But you wanted to make a point, Dylan, I think.
I'm not buying it. I don't think he's very good. I didn't like either of his matches on this show, to be honest with you. And that final was so boring, I thought. Like, if Garina or not. And Quiet Storm, here's the thing. I'm not going to sit here and say he's the greatest worker in the world. But I'll always have a soft spot for him. I'll always have a soft spot for him because when I first got into wrestling, K-Dojo was my jam, and I couldn't believe that there was an American living in wrestling, you know, living in Japan and wrestling. So he was like an inspiration to me on a personal level. So I'll always like him, even though a lot of people kind of aren't into him that much. But I just thought that final was, there was nothing I'll remember about that match in, a, you know, 2 weeks.
I thought it was decent. Didn't really... I don't really have a strong opinion one way or another about the final. I thought it was a match that happened.
It wasn't bad. It was exactly like it was an average match. I would say it wasn't like offensively bad. But I really don't think either of those guys are offensively bad. Even Daichi, it's very rare he like totally blows it. You know, it's happened before, but I just think he's very he's offensively average. I guess if that makes sense. That's kind of what I thought about this match. It was a match that happened in the final with no fans. But I just don't think ultimately maybe it won't matter either way. But I think he's one of the more interesting guys when we talk about Big Japan, where he would end up if worst comes to worst. Mm. But he did win the tournament. I just think that ultimately this was not according to any plan. So you can't really, even if whether you love it or you don't like it, you can't really blame anyone because this was not their original plan. Mm. I'm all certain.
No, I think that's true. And But I wanted to talk about Quiet Storm for a bit, because this guy, he has been living in Japan since 2003, I believe. He's been, or 2002 even, and no, 2003 at his first match, actually. April 10, 2003, K-Dojo, Club K500, Quiet Storm beat Chihiro Asahi in 6 minutes and 23 seconds. For over 15 years now, this guy has been living in Japan with K-Dojo, Michinoku Pro. He had some matches for Osaka Pro for a long time, then Pro Wrestling Noah, now Big Japan. He is...
Journeyman.
He's a journeyman, yeah. It's really crazy. I showed the picture of the Ikitosen final to some of my friends, and I told them, please name the man on the right. And it was Quiet Storm. And they said, I know that face. I know that face from somewhere. He was in that matches with SAT, Brian XL, back in the day in the Indies in the early 2000s. And yes, that's him. That's an incredible story, to be honest.
Oh, it is. Well, I didn't even know that. I wasn't a big fan of American Indies, but like, I know I keep my ear to the ground, and I always heard about these matches, so I saw them. And I saw it was Quiet Storm. I was like, and this was when Quiet Storm was teaming with Yone probably like 3 years ago. I was like, Quiet Storm was in Ring of Honor in 2002, like looking completely different.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's bounced around everywhere. He has truly bounced around Japan. He was, I think that was one of the years he wrestled nearly 250 matches for Osaka Pro.
Yeah. When they had their daily shows.
Yes. Uh-huh. I don't know if he's... Say we weren't in a pandemic, would you see him signing anywhere or being a freelancer? Because we had this conversation on our Pure and the Rough, and we didn't really see anywhere signing him per se. Like,
no.
I saw him doing 2AW shots.
I would actually see him doing more Big Japan and having Big Japan as his main base, and from there on, as you said, doing shows like 2AW, VKF, Osaka Pro, J-Stage, that kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, the indies that are, like, we hear about them, but, like, they're still not huge. He's not doing the indies that don't make, like, on cage match, at least. I don't think he'd shoot down that low.
I'm not sure if he's doing the lucha-based federations in Fukuoka that I've never looked out for, so I'm not sure about that.
Well, how many little promotions? Have you guys traveled to Japan at all?
No. I actually was scheduled to go this year.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I already have a flight booked.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
When?
I was going in July.
Oh, yeah. Poor bugger.
Yeah.
Sorry, mate.
Well, it's I'm already I basically, when this all started and when everything in May got canceled, that was the moment that I figured it's not going to happen. So it's not too bad anymore.
Yeah, everyone's had to deal with like something like that. It's crazy. Like, well, I know a lot of people in my life had to cancel flights, can't go to a wedding, can't go to a funeral. It's just a crazy world.
Yeah. But to your point, there are literally hundreds of them. I mean,
yeah.
If you go to Osaka only, the promotions that I can name from Osaka right now are VKF, Osaka Pro, Dotonbori Pro. Then there is, I believe, what's his name? Kengo Takai has a promotion in isn't Team Dera, is that from Osaka too?
Dera, yeah, Team Dera or Dera Project or something.
Yeah,
like
I think
that.
that's from Osaka too. Pro Wrestling, no, it's from Nagoya actually. I'm sorry to mix that up. Nagoya is another hotbed of small indies. To be honest, with Team Dera, Sportiva, and all these kind of smaller groups.
Secret Base.
A secret base. But if you only take Osaka, there are, I would say, at least a couple of dozen tiny promotions in that city or area alone.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think that, you know, he had to have something in mind to leave Noah in the first place.
Mm.
You know, like, and he...
I think he wasn't in the... He wasn't seen as being a part of the future in Noah.
Mm.
I mean, he wasn't going to be a part of the future, but, you know, he was on a solid undercard act with Yone, and now Yone's stuck doing nothing, although he does have a great afro. I will give him that. But Storm, to me, I don't see where he would have gone outside of Noah, unless it's like you're saying, and they just wanted to get rid of him, you know. And it's not like he was a vital part of the promotion at all, with no
solid... Yeah, with Nassauer, like, purely bringing in all of his friends.
Yeah, there's like, no place for Quiet Storm anymore.
And it might be the sad fact that you see it for other... Not that they have a ton of dwindling lower-card mid-carders. Like, I feel like most guys are safe there, but I saw the writing on the wall. Nassauer's been bringing in every one of his friends that don't have a job or...
yes.
That's where, why I knew, all right, Sawyer's probably going to end up at Noah. because they're all over. You just get follow Nassauer on Twitter, and you'll basically see his booking for like 3 months. You just whoever he's hanging out with, you're like, oh, okay. So you're bringing in Moshi next month, okay? I didn't think he was one of Nassauer's quote unquote boys, as a Sakuraba or a Fujita or a Rene Dupree. They go back all the way to All Japan.
Yes,
no.
Actually, yeah.
All Japan, was it?
I think it was All Japan. He was in the Gurentai stable. And I think yes. Rene Dupree at that point in time was working for All Japan. So I believe, Rene Dupree is one of those guys that always had a connection through Muto. So that's, I think, where he got his gig with. Quiet Storm, I think he will just keep living in Japan for the foreseeable future. Let's see where that
goes. He's on TKO stuff here and there.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, he's done television. I used to follow him on Twitter. Hmm. And he's even on a television show as of, like, 3 weeks ago.
Oh.
3 or 4 weeks ago. It was before the finals, the Strong Climb finals. But, yeah, it was comedy. He was doing something in comedy or a game show. But, no. I don't know if it's a career, but he appeared on television. He has appeared on television numerous times.
Now, Dylan, back to your match of the month list. We got two matches from this double shot on the weekend that Big Japan did on your match of the month list. Number 9 is Hideyoshi Kamitani and Yuya Aoki versus Takuo Kato and Yasufumi Nakanoa from April 26. Great match, I gotta say. And even better... Yeah. Was the one that Isami was in. We were going to talk about him here in Big Japan too. Isami and Takuma Nomura against Akira Yodo and Yuji Okabayashi. Please talk about these two matches that you put in here.
Yes, I agree with you that the second one was better, but they were both worth watching, in my opinion. To me, I like them better than the tournament matches, actually. You know, to me, I think I really love the purpose of the matches themselves, which you had the big young guys, Hyodo and Kato, in both matches. They both got a lot of shine. Aoki, to me, I love what this guy's been doing this entire year. I think he's really reached another level.
To me, he is on top of the guys that you can claim are the wrestlers of the year until this point.
And he was the wrestler of the month in my very Patreon article, if you looked at as well.
Yep.
So clearly we're on the same page with Aoki. I love what he's been doing. And like I said, in the writing that I wrote there, this guy, he was set on top of a division that was basically dead in the water when he got the title. And the company itself is completely floundering and falling apart around him. And yet he's still putting in these great performances and showing that this guy needs to be taken seriously as a great worker, because usually it's the guys like Nomura and Abe in the company, and even some of the younger guys have gotten some hype recently. But Aoki was like, no, I won't be denied. I'm just as good as anybody in this company. And I loved his stuff here in this match. I thought him and Kato, that could be a great, you know, there are different weight divisions, but if Aoki ever did bulk up, that could be a great match in the future. And I loved what they did in that match a lot, I would say. So I'm really high on Aoki right now. And I always liked him, actually, even when he was a young guy. He just was in a really bad spot in the junior division, but he somehow overcome it, I think. And this year, like you said, he has to be, at least in Japan, he's right up there, top 5 wrestler of the year candidate, in my opinion, for sure. The second match, I also really liked, again, Isami Kodaka. Great worker, as you can say here. And this match had more star power than the other ones. To me, Kamitani and Nakanoe, they're just guys. But here it's like everybody kind of contributed with Kodaka, Nomura, Hyodo, and Okabayashi, which everybody loves Isami and everyone loves Okabayashi. But Hyodo is somebody to watch as well. Just like Kato is my guy. But Hyodo is also very good as well. So I really liked everything. That there was really no weak links in this match. I really liked what they did. And I thought it was a great match. Hyodo and Nomura, that's another match that I feel like could be a match of the future if things play out well for them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Isaac, your take on these guys, like Hyodo, Isami in this division, Yuya Aoki.
Yeah, Aoki's done a fantastic job. I think everyone's sort of in our little Twitter bubble of Puro, everyone sort of really noticed the last 3 months. We knew he was good. Like, the division was floundering. Like, the division was so bad. Like, they have good guys, they just don't know how to book. When I did the show with Dylan, we just went through of all the guys. Like, Tatsuhiko Yoshino.
You know,
to that point, I'm so glad that they gave the junior division at least some shine on these shows, that they had some of the tag matches on the 25th on top of the show. Because even when they brought in Drew Parker for all this, he is another cool guy that they could use in this division. And they had the semi-main event on the 25th, so at least they got that.
Yeah. Drew, is he a junior heavyweight?
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
just is. Sort of float around?
Well, he came in for the death matches. But much like Toshiyuki Sakuda, he's also doing the junior division, so kind of both.
I see.
What's your take on Yodo?
I avoided most of Big Japan's undercards for a long time. So honestly, I've probably seen about two matches of his in like undercards at Kurikans. I missed this match, so I can't say a lot on him, sadly. Okay. All the other guys, like, I've seen Kusuke Sato, I've said
he's a lot
of good things about him. I like him, he's really good. Yeah, he's probably my favorite young guy, but I feel like he's sort of out of the young class a bit now. I don't know. BJW have all their rookies are usually good. Like, their duds, you can look at a couple of their duds, like Orca Uto or Kaz Kuda. Like, there are some duds, but I mean, for the most part, they're pretty well capable wrestlers.
Stop. I will not allow this besmirching of the name of Kikuta, the man who dates Manami Toyota, on my podcast. Ladies, are you crazy? Right.
I've been talking nonsense about that guy since like 2015.
We are.
Honestly, he has got like 2% better. Like, some of his stuff does look a lot better than it used to.
Yes.
All of his stuff looks better than it used to.
The Jake Lee match was pretty good.
Yeah, that was the most stars I've ever given a Kazumi Kakuta match. 3.5.
He got the secret. Yoshihashi taught us when he married Ayumi. Like, once you date a great Joshi wrestler, and that's when he learned. He learned from her, and he's getting better, as we saw with Jake Lee. But hey, more than that, more than anything. Also, I did like Uto. I just don't think they used him very well. I will.
It's very unfortunate what happened to him. Yeah, I agree with you, Dylan.
Yeah.
I was going to make a point before we go to Isami about these two tag matches, too. I really, really like the idea of Takuo Kato and Nakanura teaming and of Akira Yodo and Yuji Kobayashi teaming. If there were shows going on right now, I'd really push for these two teams to be permanent teams in the tag division of Big Japan, because A, it would be something new, and B, the young guys could profit from that very well.
Well, all I know is one thing. I need to talk to a listener to the show right now. Kato-san, Anata wa Subarashi Shigoto o Shimashita right now. You did a great job, buddy. That's what I said in Japanese.
You're a very good guy, Kato. So continue that. You know, I was wondering, does Ryota Hama have somewhat of a medical condition? Because he was not on these two shows. I'm not sure if they announced anything about that.
I think it would be better for somebody... No, people have got to turn this the wrong way. Look at Hama, he's ginormous compared to everybody else. I would keep him at home just like I'd keep the elderly at home during a crisis.
Yeah.
Yes. That's not being insensitive. It's just being real. He is like 230 kilos. If he got it, you reckon his lungs would be all right to survive the corona? Probably not. I hope it's just they're being precautionary and isn't injured or something.
I was just it just something that I noticed on this card, but I agree with you. And he's done some workout videos on his Twitter, so you can keep updated on there at Hamachanko.
He's got a new haircut as well. He's got the mohawk going on.
That looks awesome, to be honest. But let us go to Isami Kodaka. Isaac, Isami Kodaka, not only with the deathmatch division, or maybe not even with the deathmatch division anymore in Big Japan, we don't know, but he was in the Strong Climb, and he was in this tag match here with Takuya Nomura. I really think that he'd bring a very good new flavor to the Strong division. Is there some particular matches that you'd like to see Isami being in Big Japan?
I think we were all very happy when he was revealed to be the X. I don't think anyone expected it. I thought we might expect an outsider, like an American guy, a GCW guy. I don't know, something. But when Asami was announced, I was like, oh, hell yeah. And his match with Sekimoto at Shinkiba was good. I like the match with Takizawa at Kurken where he finished him off with the Jintaro clutch. Yes, I enjoyed that match. Isami's had some really great matches in the Strong division against, like, Sekimoto and Okabayashi in tag matches and the Twin Towers, the best tag team of, like, 2015, 2016 against Yenki Nichikenju. Like, some of those matches were great. Now, Isami, as much as I love him everywhere else, he loves his promotion so much, and I don't know how much Bassery you guys get to watch, but
I watch it all.
Good
man. Smart man. Like, I don't know if you noticed, but, like, on these little spot shows for Bassery, might be 100 people, like, he still goes out. All those six-mans with Sparky and, like, against Tanizaki and Akiyori Takazawa and Nakatsu, and he's teaming up with Fujita. Like, all those mixy guys, like, all year they've been fantastic.
Yeah.
Isami over the park.
I always make sure to watch him when he's in matches with, like, Daiki Shimomura, and on the, like, when he has a third match on a show with Daiki Shimomura, you know that it's going to be a great match.
Yes, I feel like they're a combo like the Gambari pairing of Kisuke Ishii and what's his name?
Shuichiro Katsumura?
No.
Tommy Naga?
No, the one that throws the kicks.
Iwasaki. Yeah.
Yeah, Kyohei Iwasaki and Ishii, where those two are sort of like paired together. They fight great against each other, but they're also a tag team. Shimomura, he's great. I like him. The entire Bassery roster I enjoy. Not to get on a Bassery rant, we are talking about my favorite wrestler of the last 5 years, though. So sorry if I do talk a bit much about Asami.
No, that was exactly my point.
He's not one of those deathmatch guys that gets a bad rap for just being a trash worker. I feel like people know at this point he's 38. He's been around since 2004, 2005. Like. People know now he's much more than just a deathmatch fighter. Even if he was just a deathmatch fighter, then he'd still be great, but I like him just as much outside of the deathmatch.
Yeah, I think Dylan has a very similar take on that.
I hate him. He's the worst ever.
Goodbye.
I love Isami. Like I said, great worker. Even in the March Madness, I took him over to Tanaka, and I shocked the world with that pick. I really like Isami. I think he's a great worker and a great personality. A lot of fun. Drinks a lot. What more do you want from a guy?
Talk to Mart about that.
Yeah, dressed up like Goku sometimes. This is my guy right now. I'd love to hang out with Isami Kodaka. Great wrestler, and what a hoot of a guy.
What a hoot. Yeah.
The pitch is Morton, our good friend Brother Mort, has posted with Isami late nights in one of the bars. They look lots of fun.
It's incredible. Yeah, I don't know. Anything else you want to add to Big Japan Pro Wrestling in regards to their double shot on April 25,
26. I'm alright.
Yeah, I'm good.
We covered it.
Good. Well, then there was another one from 2AW Square, also with some Big Japan influx. 2AW themselves also ran their own place for a change. And they had a show on April 28 with the main event of Yuji Okabayashi defending the 2AW Openweight title against Taishi Takisawa. And this again, Dylan, is one of the matches that made your top 10.
Yeah, it was pretty high up too. This is one of my more liked matches of the month, the main event match on this show. I really liked that. I love the idea of Okabayashi as the champion because it's almost a win-win. As particularly in the context of the world right now, Okabayashi gets more work, and that's good for him being mm-hmm. the champion here. And on the other hand, 2AW gets a guy who's a way bigger star than they would normally have on any of their roster, pretty much, as their champion.
The entire point of that, actually.
Yeah, exactly. So, it fits perfectly for both sides, and as a bonus, he also just happens to be one of the best wrestlers in the world. So anytime you would have someone like him, if I ran a company, even if I were the most successful company in the world, I would still want Okabayashi on a high spot on my roster, let alone when you're a lower-level company like this. It can only help your guys, and it makes someone like Takizawa, who got to go a good distance with Okabayashi here in this match, I thought he did a great job of trying to make you believe he could win, even though I never really bought that, of course. But still, I thought he did a good job on his own. Takizawa was a good worker, one of their most veteran and one of their better workers as well. So I thought it was a really strong match. Great use of size from Okabayashi, even though Takizawa was not super small by 2AW standards. Compared to Okabayashi, he's pretty small. So I thought they did a great job using all of that, and at the same time keeping Taishi's credibility here. So I thought it really put him over even in the loss. And Okabayashi is a great champion, no matter whether it's 2AW, BJW, Secret Base, New Japan, Brazil Wrestling, anywhere he goes, he can be an awesome-ass world champion for you. Yeah. So I thought it was a really great match.
Even was in WXW once, and that is actually something that they went back to in this match, because when he was in WXW, he dislocated his shoulder when he did his golem splash from the top. And he had this nasty injury that kept him out for a couple of months. And this actually was what Taishi Takisawa worked over in this match. So very smart strategy on his point. And Okabayashi had to work through that that pain in the match, and actually had to do the lariat with his other arm in this match too. That's what I noticed. And it looked a little crooked when he did it, because it's not the usual way that he does the lariat. But that came off very well. Kind of a callback to the Hideki Suzuki match from 2 years ago, when Suzuki also worked over Okabayashi's arm. And Taishi Takisawa, he's one of the top guys of 2AW, actually, so good first defense for Okabayashi to set up his reign.
Did he do some bad? Didn't he mess up bad? Because there's always been something about Taishi Takisawa.
Yeah, he got in trouble for a sexual scandal where he took his phone and filmed people's, like, women's undergarments through their
group. That was very bad.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah,
it's pretty gross.
One of those sex offenders in Japanese wrestling.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, that's true. I remember that.
I always knew there was something. I just didn't know what.
He had to go through all the process that they'd usually do in Japanese wrestling, where he shaves his head and starts from underneath, but nothing really... No real serious consequences happened to him.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
It was a Taka's promotion.
He was in good company with Taka Michinoku, to be quite honest.
Yeah. It sucks for him, because he probably would have actually been on... he would have been able to go on and do a lot more, especially when the New Japan relationship was on point. He could have been on some of those Lionsgate shows and gotten some publicity, because talent-wise, he's good enough to make a... catch some eyeballs if he were to wrestle on a bigger stage like that, and he never got to do it because of that messed up stuff that he did. So he really screwed himself over, even though there wasn't punishment from the company.
It's more symbolic punishment, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. There really wasn't anything from the company, but there were consequences because he could have been a lot bigger.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I just think that he, as a wrestler, he's pretty good, or can be great in some matches. Like these things that he did are obviously awful, and there is nothing else to say about that. So, yeah, you said it right, Dylan. He could have been something, but he screwed himself over with being, like, this sex offender.
How do you guys find, are you able to separate the two? Like, are you able to enjoy his matches still, knowing some stuff? Because I don't feel like I can go back and watch a Joe Giordani match again, you know?
Yes, that is actually something that I couldn't do either. I don't know. With Takisawa, I actually, when Dylan brought it up, I for whatever reason, I had forgotten about that, actually. That is a blunder on my end. But with Yoji Otani, I wanted to watch the J-Stage show from last June where he faced, what's his name?
Shima?
You know, Irie in the main event for this British title, for the Southern SWE title. But I couldn't watch the match after all this got out, what he did in Hida.
Yeah. I think it's a thing with time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure, like, I only found out of the whole Kentaro Kanemura thing the other week about what he did to a woman.
I was just
backstage
thinking about that. You made all these tweets about him, why he didn't go anywhere, and I just figured, maybe you find out eventually.
Yeah, I found out, because I was watching all back his old death matches, and he was awesome for this chubby little Buddha-looking dude. He was awesome. He had great matches, and then I saw that, and I was like, that makes sense. It's a thing with Japanese wrestling. It's just not reported on as much. Like, I think it was you the one that sent the Hiroshi Hase, or was it more?
No, it was not me. But I came across that on Twitter and I retweeted that. That was going to be the next point that I was going to make. With Hiroshi Hase, there's another thing that came out in recent weeks that, apparently he's another one of those guys that you can classify as a sex offender. And even worse, it is a organization that cares for women that have already been victims of this. And
that was sick.
Let
me speak on that, because I had some pretty strong thoughts on that on Twitter, and I didn't even know we were going to get into that, to be honest with you. Like, when I saw that, I was so angry.
Yeah.
Like, this is a man who, like, first of all, like you said, what you said was totally right. Like, any kind of sexual offender act is terrible. Like, there's no real nice way to say it. Anything you would do on that level. It's so much, like, it's even more disgusting to me that this man, a politician, someone in power now, is going after people on the streets that were already victims, teenage women, like teenage girls, and he's going after. This is a man who had honor when he was a wrestler. Like, he's the one who left New Japan after the crazy Sasaki thing because he was guilty. He had honor, and it wasn't his fault, but he felt that guilt, and he had to leave because of that. So now you're going in, now you have power, and you're an old bastard, and you go after teenagers that had already been victimized?
I mean,
fuck that. That pissed me off so much.
It's bad to begin with, but it's even, as you said, he's a man in power, and he set precedences. He's setting precedences for other people maybe to do the same that he did, because they see, okay, this is a guy that is in power and nothing ever happens to him, so why not?
And this asshole has the audacity to put out this statement that says he apologized, and yet what do we see immediately after that? The one that he grabbed says that he never contacted them personally at all.
Yeah.
He's not been forced to resign. There's been no consequences, to my knowledge, on him. So I'm so sick of these bullshit politicians and rich assholes that stir everyone in this world up over stupid, superficial bullcrap and get away with stuff as they abuse their power because they have more money than people that were on the streets that have suffered. So that was totally disgraceful on every level. And I don't want to downplay anybody's actions, like Takizawa or anybody. Yeah. But for somebody for somebody like that in power, that really got to me, especially him, somebody that I had so much respect for. Mm. To me, I've always said he was one of the best workers. But more than that, I always respected how he handled that situation, something that was a tough spot for anybody to deal with. You can read about it online if you want to know more about it. But I always respected that man. Yeah. And he doing that, I was so disappointed and just truly unhappy by that. So I don't know how I'm going to take watching his matches. But it was just terrible.
Actually, Dylan, I was thinking that we could actually, in the past, I was thinking that we could actually do a series on Hiroshi Hase on our Patreon. And now that I read that, or that came out now, I'm really glad that we didn't.
I would hope you guys would do a Schluck series before you do a Hiroshi Hase series.
Neither
honestly, one. Like, that's the worst one I've read. Like, I've come across. Like, everyone, like, Joji Otani, he wasn't a huge name, but the story got out there on, like, even not pure Twitter, like, wrestling Twitter got hold of it. And you can, like, you can't compare that, but you compare what Hase did as opposed to the Otani situation. I'm not defending Otani, you can read about him, but, yeah, Hase is meant to be a safe figure in society, and yeah, it's disgusting. Yeah. And I hope someone comes to justice, because I hope it doesn't get buried. Like, a lot of things seem to just get buried and go away, and everybody forgets about
them. You can see that they tried to bury it, because they said they apologized, which they didn't, apparently. So,
let me just say this. Otani's act was completely disgusting. And physical wise, I don't even want to say the worst, but it got to a higher level with him, so to speak, if you just want to break it down to that level. And he had no remorse at all when he got arrested. You know, everybody kind of, you know, if you've read that situation, you know what it was. It was completely disgusting. There's no questioning that. You cannot disregard anybody. But, like I said, the Hase thing was so crazy to me because, you know, there, and especially for me on a personal level, there are not many wrestlers and not many politicians that I would trust. And I'll tell you now, Isaac, when you asked that question about do you separate people, to me, if you don't separate somebody on some level, you can't watch wrestling.
Exactly. Because, yeah, you know, that's true.
To be in wrestling, and I've always said this, I don't know if we ever talked about this, because we both trained in wrestling, Isaac, and I know you can relate to me on this. To me, how I've always felt, maybe it's a little different in the Australian scene, but I have always felt that to be in wrestling, you can't be, you have to be a little messed up. Like, that's kind of how I felt in some way. And it could be not necessarily a negative thing or a bad thing, but you can't be completely perfect normal, you know, to be in wrestling. There are obviously varying levels to that, but there are so many bad people in this wrestling world, but really just in the world in general too, that, like, if you want to take it to this really meta level to where it's even above the Eastern Lariat and Puro in the Rough, it's like you have to separate everything from everything almost to, or you're going to be in some kind of guilt, because every corporation out there has skeletons in their closet. Mm. Every company out there has a skeleton in their closet. Every wrestling organization has skeletons in their closet. And a lot of the wrestlers, and I'm not saying all of them, I'm sure there's plenty of great people in wrestling too, even if they're a little messed up. I like to think I'm one of them, that's a good person too. But even if they're a little messed up, there are plenty of great people, but there's also plenty of really, really sad and disgusting assholes like Hiroshi Hase out there that would abuse his power. But there's plenty more. So it's really hard for me to even, it's not that I don't think about it with someone like Takizawa, but like I said, ultimately, who knows what else has been going on above anybody on this show that we're talking about? Nobody knows what's going on behind closed doors of their lives. Oh. So it's just a crazy thing in this world. So hopefully everybody understands where I'm coming from on that.
No, absolutely. I think it's important to talk about it on a show like this here. There's really nothing that I can add to that, except that I agree with you 100% on all the points that you made, Dylan.
And by the way, there's absolutely nothing wrong. And I say this, hey, me and you, Strig, we've watched Chris Benoit matches before on Super J. Remember?
Oh, yeah. I remember very well that this was the first Chris Benoit match when I watched back the 94 Super Jacob. This was the first Chris Benoit match that I had watched ever since the murder happened.
I still haven't watched a match since the murder happened.
And I mean, to your point, Dylan, it's something completely different, obviously, from the talking point that we talked about here on this show. But Isaac brought it up too on his Twitter recently. The Dragon Gate thing with when they abused the monkey in their dojo. That is another thing that was absolutely mind-boggling at the point and totally unacceptable from the company's standpoint.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's nothing wrong with anybody who can't separate them either. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to watch that. You know, sometimes ignorance is bliss, And if you don't know, then it doesn't even matter, you know, to a lot of people when it comes to watching. Not that it doesn't matter, but that,
we can't tell anyone, and we can't tell anyone if you still follow that, you're a bad person, that we can't do. Everybody has to set their own ways of watching and set their own standards, so it's really hard to talk about these topics, to be honest.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with, and nobody should be guilted if they don't want to watch them either.
I
don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. Like I said, no, what I'm trying to say is nobody's psychic. You know, there may be a lot of bad people, but the fans and people on the outside looking in aren't going to know every single thing in people's personal lives. That's ridiculous to expect. So I really have no problem if nobody wants to watch someone like, obviously Benoit is like a super extreme case, or someone like Takizawa or Hase or Otani that we talked about, Joji Otani.
We're talking about Joji Otani. Most of you might not even know him.
That's true.
We're definitely not Shinjiro. Shinjiro is good dad Shinjiro.
When I saw that, I was like, Otani, what? At first, I was like, holy crap. But then I saw it was Joji from Heat Up, obviously, for us. But yeah, it's not Shinjiro Otani. It was Joji Otani. So it's good that we specified that as well.
I think he's off the planet as well. He was meant to come back after 3 months. Tamura said he'd accept him back after 3 months if he shaves his hair, yada yada yada.
Yeah.
But he just never came back. So
I don't know.
It's crazy how these men and like Otani's a picture perfect case of it. It's crazy how he didn't even have any remorse over all this. You know, it's one thing to do it, right? Like when you get caught, you can at least say, you know, put some kind of apology out, do something. But like you said with Takizawa, there's really no consequences. For him, I don't know what's going on with him, but I wish that he had shown a little bit more remorse, just on a human level.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. I agree. How do we go? I don't know. There's no transition to go back. So I'll just.
I'm sorry for that huge rant, but Hase really pissed me off.
As I said, I absolutely agree, and it's good to bring that up here, and good for you that you were able to just voice your anger about that.
It's good if some people who don't know now know.
Okay, so we were talking about 2AW originally, and one other point that I wanted to make is that I had no clue why there were clipped matches on this show.
That was so weird, wasn't it?
Like, they gave them the 2-hour window to air their show in. But why is there a 2-hour window on Samurai TV in these days? They don't have anything new to air. I was completely puzzled by that.
Isaac, you have any answers for us on that?
Oh, I'm just thinking the Samurai TV people are just having... They don't care. They're having sake at work 8 a.m. through till 9 p.m. They're just like, oh, well, you get what you're given. It's pandemic season, baby.
I don't know. Like, when they did the first match, when they showed the first match, it was 10 minutes into the show that the first match ended, and they had opening credits, and they did entrances for the first match, and the first match ended. It was Shu Asakawa against Eki, what's his name? Wakamatsu?
Yeah.
And it was 8 minutes and 37 seconds, which was shown on screen, and I was thinking, wait, they only showed like 2 minutes from that match. So, yeah. Well,
it was a great 2 minutes, though.
It was a great 2 minutes. I like the tag title match. I love the tag team of Shango and Kachi Tomato. That's a great fun tag team.
It is.
But otherwise, yeah, the show was what it was. Tank Nagai being set up as a challenger for Okabayashi. That should be a great host fight. Nagai is great.
Yeah, that'll be really good. Big fan of Tank.
Tank Nagai, Dylan, as you said, he's one of those guys that also is married to a former Yoshi wrestler in Mio Shirai. So he's got superpower as well, apparently.
And he was always good to begin with.
Exactly, yeah.
He just gained even more superpower.
Yep.
Exactly. Imagine how good he can be. Hey, can I say something real quick about the tag title match?
Yeah, sure.
How crazy is it that Chango is still around? Like, this guy, talk about a blast from the past. How long has this guy been around in the Japanese indies?
Well, he has always been around, but only in the secret base-like promotions.
Yeah, exactly.
18 years or so?
Yeah. He's been an original Toriumon trainee.
Yeah. He was on the Dragon Gate Toriumon show.
Yeah,
reunion show.
That was his first show with the promotion ever.
Has he even worked Dragon Gate?
Ever,
or was he...
ever.
Yeah, he was purely Toriumon.
Yep, he was in El Dorado. Then he bounced around the indies doing Kensuke Office a lot in 2009, 2010, 2011. Was with Big Japan for some stints. Secret Base. Big Japan and Secret Base had these joint shows in 2009.
What?
Yeah.
Yes, Secret Base used to run Shinjuku. Now they're literally doing like 20 people a show, if that.
And actually, this Toriumon reunion show was his first actual Toriumon show. He has been in Mexico, of course, doing some matches there. But that's what a career this guy had.
He mustn't have even graduated from the dojo. Or,
I think he graduated in Mexico. Knows?
Okay.
I think he did.
Yeah, it shocked me when I found out all the guys that came from there.
Do you want to know one match that we have here on the... on our database is from August 28, 2005. Katsushika Okada beat Guillermo Akiba, which was the name that Chango went with in 2005.
Wonderful. What promotion?
Toriumon of Mexico.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was a TV show.
Well, listen, we talked about doing different things, and... the time if New Japan runs a show with no fans and they bring back an old rival of Okada's.
They should bring in Hajime Ohara too.
There's a lot of heat there. I don't know if that would work. but Chango, though, Okada, I'm sure, would love to take on his good buddy Chango yet again. One more time for the good old days. Yeah. That is what we need to see. But I was very happy to see him. I was like, wow. This guy has been like a staple of the low level indies in Japan for as long as I've been watching, which is over 10 years. So I was very happy.
Those are the indies I love. Like, I wish we had footage of these tiny promotions. When that Lucha Libre promotion Striga told me about, what's it called?
Real Striga, Lucha Libre.
Real Lucha Libre, like, stuff like that. I want to go live in Japan just for 3 months and just go through and find out, oh, Mikami's wrestling in front of 7 people today. Like, I just want to see what these guys, like, who's actually still wrestling. Because a lot of guys are still wrestling. It's just, like, it's Japan. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
When you go back through Cage Match and you see some of these guys that have been literally everywhere, like, there'll be a guy, mainly during the 2000s, that did, next to his, like, year 2007, there'll be, like, 20 promotions, and he's just, they've all worked everywhere. The Brahmins have worked everywhere. The Brahmins are from Toriumon, and I only just found out, like, the other week of all their old stuff in El Dorado and everything.
I love that.
Did you ever listen to the CD that they had?
Sorry.
I never listened to the CD, no, sadly not.
Did they make a CD?
Yeah. The Sailor Boys.
Yeah, they were a boy band originally, not the Brahmin Brothers. With Taiji. Yeah.
Good.
It's on YouTube. They have a song on YouTube. If you look it up, you can see one of their songs on there. If you want to listen, that's shout out to all the listeners out there. If you want to hear the Sailor Boys, Taiji Ishimori, and the Brahmin Brothers sing as a boy band, check it out.
Amazing. Good times, man. Two more talking points on this show today, gentlemen. First, being 2AW Square right now is the new hub of pro wrestling, as Isaac called it off air, you could also call it the new, like, mecca of pro wrestling, I don't know, the new Currican Hall of pro wrestling, the new hotbed of wrestling, because basically all of these empty arena shows are coming from 2AW Square, the original Chiba Blue Field, and I believe that the place is owned by the parent company of 2AW. So it's basically their place. It's their dojo, their place where they run their shows. And it's really a good life insurance for them, while a promotion like Big Japan is suffering a lot right now, and they are on the verge of going down, and we'll talk about that. I mean, there are other promotions that have places, like, for example, Ice Ribbon. They have their dojo. They do shows there. Other promotions do shows there, too. Then Dragon Gate has a place in Kobe where they do their Dragon Gate studio shows. Michinoku Pro has their dojo. They've done shows there. DDT, obviously. But no place is really as big as 2AW Square, which is kind of a good replacement for Shinkiba First Ring, which is closed right now.
Yeah. I actually thought they might use the 01 dojo initially, because they
abandoned that, didn't they?
Really?
I think they left the place.
Ah, that probably makes sense. They probably don't have enough money for a dojo.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, 2AW, it's a nice, like, when BJW said we're coming from an unknown location, like the Big Japan TV studios, and then it was like, oh, it's just 2AW's home. But it looks good. But I also did like Noah, how Noah had their setup. I thought that looked pretty professional and cool. I mean, yeah,
apparently
but I'm not
there was a place in Kawasaki somewhere.
I see. But no, all about this becoming the new Shinkiba.
All I know is that me and you, Strig, Isaac, you weren't here for a lot of this, but we've recorded multiple times this week for the Chono Project on our Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat, and I've come to know that this is your favorite story in wrestling, 2AW Square, because every episode you've mentioned it to me, so I knew we were going to get to it again right here. But yes, it's a very nice thing. The former Chiba Bluefield. That's how I will always know it as a Kato. Like that.
For
that was
sometime. It was also called the Reina Bluefield, wasn't it? I think Reina owned it once.
That makes sense. Reina is a crazy ass company. Mm. Like with their history, if you want to look at that.
Yeah.
But yeah. 01 Dojo. I know them and Ice Ribbon share a dojo. 2AW. I think they're more like on this Big Japan. This is just a crazy time in wrestling, to say the least, but it's good that, you know, CMLL and Lucha has taught us, and WWE, obviously, with their Performance Center, has taught us that it's only good things to own your own buildings, and I would advise every promotion to buy their own.
So,
yes,
I think to go back to what Dylan said earlier, yesterday I made the point that 2AW Square is the Arena Mexico of Japan now.
Yes.
Totally.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, so we'll see about that. At least they can keep alive now because they're probably renting out the place to all these other promotions that they're running it. So that's good for 2AW. But on the other hand, there are promotions like Big Japan Pro Wrestling. And we've been, as Dylan, you can tell, we've been on this topic for the past couple of weeks. Big Japan is in a lot of financial trouble. And now even more. There was a Tokyo Sports article where Great Kojika was quoted that Big Japan is losing between 300,000 and 600,000 yen per show based on the size of the show. So probably the big Yokohama Bunker Gymnasium, they are losing around 600,000 yen per show, which is in the range of $2,800 to $5,600 per one show. That is what they're losing. And they're losing their ass now. Which is why they started...
It's a lot.
Yeah. Which is why they started their crowdfunding now on a page called Campfire. Sadly, you're only able to donate on this page if you have a Japanese address or if you can name a Japanese address under your name. So I couldn't donate something on there. And their target amount is the amount of 10 million yen, which is around $93,000. And to the best of my knowledge, I'm not sure we've done a project on there, to be, of course, to be honest, on Campfire. But I wouldn't be surprised if 10 million yen is the maximum that you can put in there for one project. So they are right now, as we're recording this, a little under 3 million yen, so around 30% of their targeted amount. 248 people have donated, and 42 days remain in the project. So I just really hope that they get enough money to at least keep their promotion alive.
When you hear 93,000, in the scheme of things, it doesn't seem like a lot, but it's sad, but it's true. These guys, Toshiyuki Sakuda isn't getting paid $25,000 a year. What people get paid at the Performance Center, their base rate in America for WWE, that's pretty low given standards. But if BJW had $93,000, they could... it'd take care of a lot of their roster. I mentioned on my podcast a couple of months ago now what BJW pay the trainees. And it's something like for the first 6 months, it's $100 a month. And then it turns into $400 a month after six months. Like, these guys aren't making a lot of money.
And you gotta bring up, even for the guys that are more seasoned in Big Japan, most of these guys make a significant part of their income by selling tickets to fans. So the promotion gives out tickets, and the wrestlers will sell those tickets to fans, and they make their income from this.
Yes. And there's not 250 Okadas, you know, whereas there are 200 people in USA that are rich from wrestling, mega rich from wrestling, like the John Cena's, is Ric Flair, like Hulk Hogan, all these guys have millions of dollars. It's just not the same in Japan. Like, that's why a lot of these guys have to wrestle well into their 60s and 70s, and like, they just don't have the money. And like, BJW, when I discovered BJW 5 years ago, it just comes across as a company that looks good. They fill their shows, but the last few years have just gone down. And with this pandemic, it leaves the company in a sticky situation. And I also read in that article, Kajika said, if it lasts for more than 6 months, every promotion barred New Japan will be out of business, he thinks.
Yes, yeah. I can buy that, because... maybe not Noah and DDT now, because they are with Cyber.
And 01.
And 01, yes. They will outlast them all. Yeah, Dylan, anything to add to this?
It's like a really scary time for any promotion at this level that Big Japan is at. I think anybody can agree with that. You know... I will say, like, you know, your point, Isaac, was completely accurate. Even at the best of times, these guys aren't exactly raking in a ton of dough, you know, to where it's a crazy thing on the promotional aspect. For them to get as much as they have already, to be honest, I think is a pleasant surprise that they've gotten 30% of what they needed this fast already. But even if they get 100% of it, to me, it's almost like, I wouldn't sound negative when I say this, but it's like delaying the inevitable, almost. You know, I can't see any way that this promotion survives.
I think it's still a drop in the ocean.
Yeah. I mean, even when things were at the best of times, like before this virus stuff happened, they weren't exactly blowing up, you know, things. You know, and there was a lot of questions to what they were doing anyway. Well, you know, at this point. So to have things go so far down, you could see that they were at their wits' end pretty much. And they were so desperate to try and run these shows, to try and have fans at these shows, to make any money that they can out of them. And now we're at this. Like I said, even if they get 100%, this is a really bad look to have. It's really bad times for them. And I hate to say that, because I mentioned this on Twitter. It's kind of weird to think of a Japanese wrestling scene without Big Japan if they were to go under, because they've been around. I don't think people really grasp this point sometimes. They've been around since 95.
Yeah. Like, they're one of the 25 longest... years now. They just celebrated their 25th anniversary in March.
Yeah, you know, they're older than Noah, and I think a lot of people wouldn't know that. You know, they're older than Dragon Gate. They're older than DDT. They've been around for a long, long time. So it's just kind of crazy to think that a company that's been there and been a staple. They've had high points, too, in their past. It wasn't right now, but they've had passionate fans with their deathmatch scene. They've had really big, strong BJ matches with tons of people that have had great matches and done big houses and contributed to big houses. Mm-hmm. But
they've been a profiting company before. They've run for 25 years. No company runs for 25 years without money or underworld ties, probably. So BJW did a lot of good numbers. Throughout the mid-2000s, Jun Kasai, Takashi Sasaki, Yuko Miyamoto, all those guys drew great houses at Kurikans and yada, 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 so on.
Yeah, you know, they've done a great job then, but I think the last couple of years they have been on a downward trend in general, and I think that's where they're really having it hard right now, to where now that the going is getting tough, they don't have anything to fall back on. They don't have years of success to fall back on because they've been going down those couple of years. You know, they've had injuries, people leave, questionable championship reigns, booking problems. Everybody complains about Big Japan's bookings. You know, and before all this, they're probably going to feel a little bad about it, but they shouldn't, because, you know, it sucks what happened. But they have been going on a downward spiral, not a spiral, that's a little dramatic, but a downward slope these last couple of years. They're in, you know, it's a bad look right now.
Yeah. There's no way to sugarcoat that. And, I was always thinking about the day when guys like Daisuke Sakimoto and Yuji Kobayashi couldn't be around anymore. Who's then?
Yeah.
They've not made it. They've not really set up anyone to follow in their footsteps ever since. And, compare Okabayashi and Kawakami. They've been around for the same amount of time. They both debuted in 2008. And just look at their careers. It's so vastly different what they've done with these two guys. And even others like Takuya Nomura, who've been around for only a couple of years, they had their moments where they could have been something, but it eventually didn't happen. Because, as Dylan said, the booking wasn't good.
And it's just, it's really tough for the general public when you're not one of those big three companies, NOAH or All Japan, New Japan. And DDT has the big company backing too, so they're kind of in good graces. But for the general public, if times like this happen where, you know, there are going to have to be some hard decisions being made, they really are, you know, if you're not one of those big three, not just Big Japan, we already saw with Wrestle 1 already, the circumstances were a little bit different, but you're an odd man out. You know, and right now, and that's kind of the position they find themselves in. But I do think that it is encouraging that they've gotten so much so fast. Like, you know, not even a few hours in and they've gotten 30%. I just think, like I said, even if they got to 100%, I still am very, very nervous about their future. And not even like a long-term future. I'd be very surprised if they last this entire year, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. And sorry to end this on another sad or worrying news part, or even angering news part?
Well, let me give you this one good thing, though, if there is something that I will give a little bit of hope for. Like I said, they've gotten more than expected early on, and some people have been saying stuff about other companies closing down. There's been times where I've heard people say NOAH was going to shut down a couple of years ago. Yep. You know, nobody knows what could happen. You know, and that's just, the future is way up in the air for so many things right now, and nobody knows how this is going to go for Big Japan. Maybe they can hold out, and, you know, hey, maybe they open up the country again in a couple of months, and that leads to all-time high attendances, and that helps everything for Big Japan. You know, there's nobody knows right now.
That is true. That is true. We can't really forecast anything right now, but that is also the troubling part, Dylan, that you really can't predict how anything in this world right now is going to proceed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, on that note, I guess we covered all the topics that I had for this show. Isaac, I want to thank you very much for jumping on this show and adding your opinions for this show. It really, really was a blast to finally have you on here.
I had a ball. Thank you very much, gentlemen. No, I was looking forward to this for a long time, so I'm glad I got to do this and come on the Eastern Lariat. I appreciate it. The boys, shout out to the boys, Real Hero and Lawrence, who I do the Pure and the Rough with. We'll be recording a new one of those soon. We haven't recorded in a long time since there's been nothing going on. So it's nice to have a bit of wrestling to talk about and some good fellas to talk to. Can't complain.
First of all, I got to thank you just yet again. Much like the first episode, I loved having you on, Isaac. Mad love to all of Australia. And also, huge respect to both Real Hero and Lawrence, my favorite guy from the Guts World days. We mentioned Tango earlier. He was there, too. Toyota, she was in Guts World, too. So this is a Guts World secret-themed episode of the podcast. So tell them I said hi when you go back to
lots
your show.
Of love to Real Hero and Lawrence. Lawrence was on one of the early shows that I did, actually. We talked about Guts World, of course.
Yes, I remember that podcast.
It's great that you added Real Hero to your show, too. I love listening to him.
Yeah, check out his page. This isn't a plug for the podcast or anything, but if you're stuck at home during quarantine, follow Real Hero on Twitter. He's the guy that uploads all the Puro stuff. You guys probably know him, surely. I know you guys do, but talk about listeners.
I think the listeners by now know we've been advertising the Real Hero Archive in the last couple of years a lot on this show.
Yeah, he's a bit of a Puro celebrity, you know, one of the Puro online celebrities. But check his Twitter page. He has some classics he's been uploading, and he's going to keep uploading. Yeah. Some wacky matches as well. Anything from World Japan to
Real Lucha Libre.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah, all right. So much for this show. Again, Dylan mentioned it. Please check out our Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. We've been doing a Golden Lariat series on Masahiro Chono in G1 Climax matches. Dylan has put up his match of the month listing. The 90s project is still going on there, so a lot of good stuff up there.
That's right. Tiger Cast W just had a new episode the other day. All kinds of stuff. Not just wrestling, mostly wrestling, to be honest. But sometimes we do stuff from the 90s. Sometimes we'll do stuff from America, Lucha, Shoot Style, Joshi. Everything has a home on the Eastern Lariat Patreon. You know, I think I may have had the kiss of death, unfortunately, with my XFL show that I did. And unfortunately, the league closed down. One more thing I will say to you, Isaac. Tell Real Hero that he needs to upload a video to tell Robbie Anderson how to catch footballs as we signed him, his team, the Jets. One of his guys signed to my team, the Panthers. So, and the first thing I see, what do I see but Jamal coming up saying, man, this guy can't catch worth a damn. Why'd you sign him? And I was like, man, our GM's a dumbass bastard. So tell him that. But everyone as go to the
Australian, I definitely know what you're talking about.
Listen, a huge fan of the huge fan of the Aussie rules football as well. Right now, okay, I just dropped a huge surprise. Yeah, that's right, Aussie rules.
Aussie, okay.
Love it.
That's right. Hey, yeah, yanking those DMs, and I ain't no damn northerner. So
I didn't know if that was a term that's bad nowadays or not, but I'm like, oh, I'll just go for it.
No, I'm from the South, that's all. Like, the South and the North have a little rivalry.
We've always called Yankees, like, all of America. So a Yankee's, like, a part of America.
That is actually what I told Dylan. I think I told him that basically anything north from Australia is a Yankee to you.
He said it, Isaac, not me.
Yeah, I'll take the blame.
All right. Great, guys. I enjoyed the show very much. So, to all the listeners, thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.